Perek Chafei Pasuk Chaf Aleph in Shmuel. Okay, we're trying to prove today that Avigail does belong in this very exclusive club of prophetesses in the Bible. She is not called a Neviah, as Devorah is, or as Miriam is, or as Chulda is, but she speaks to David in a way that our rabbis consider to be prophetic in nature. So let's start with Pasuk Chaf Aleph, where we left over, where David says that he has been guarding Nabal's sheep for nothing. Now, he didn't have a contract with Nabal, but we know from next week's parsha, for instance, that the punishment for stealing sheep is fourfold because of a simple cheshbon. The Rambam makes this cheshbon in the Mor Nevuchim. And certain other mafarshim make the same cheshbon, that the easier it is to sin, the more drastic the punishment ought to be. It's very easy to steal sheep. They're scattered all over the place. It's very hard to guard your sheep. So the Torah compensates for the weakness of the sheep owner by the firmness of the punishment of the one who steals sheep. You steal 10 sheep, you're going to have to pay him 40. Now you still want to steal it? Right? So because it's so easy to steal, the Torah has to compensate the owner. Who's going to want to own something that's so easy to steal? All right, so David was set up camp very close to thousands of Nabal's sheep, and Nabal was being protected by this. David says he never lost a single sheep because of my presence. Now, that is certainly worth something, but it's certainly not absent any kind of contract, anything that David feels he ought to be entitled to. And that's known in the mafia as protection rackets, isn't it? Right? You go to a series of stores on Broadway and you sell them life insurance. Or fire insurance, better. Fire insurance. And you tell them what might happen to a store that doesn't have fire insurance. Right? They don't do that in Russia, right, Yaakov? Can you do it there too?
The government doesn't.
Okay, the government. All right.
The government. That's okay. Right.
Anyway, Chas v'Shalom, I don't mean to impute this, but David does say that, look at Pasuk Chaf Aleph, David Amar, Ach la sheker shamarti es kol asher lo zeba midbar. Lo nifkad mi kol asher lo me'uma. V'yoshev li ro tachas tova. I've been watching his sheep for nothing.
Tachas tova.
Okay, very, very nice. It's very good of you to be a buffer. No one's going to want to steal sheep near David's men. And David was very, very upright himself. He has these 600 men. He's running a kolel for 600 bachrim, you know. He has to find food for them. Nah, I'm not going to do it. Take any of it from someone else.
Well, Rabbi,
all right?
I'm thinking, like, if he did feel any kind of a sense of entitlement, it may have been due either to the fact that he knew he was going to be king, or due to the fact that he had been the savior of the Jewish people. Like, basically, like, due to his military exploits, he saved them all. All
right, so you're reading ahead on to these four sources that I gave out. You get it. So Enochanami, that is true. And,
But he felt very selective in such occasions. Sometimes he didn't.
Okay, true.
In some occasions he felt it.
We'll see that his very quick willingness to gird his swords and to go and kill this man for not helping us, especially when you know, David, that anyone who helps you is putting himself in danger. Right? Okay, we answered that last week by saying that he was so far up north that it's very likely that...
And nominally in Philistine.
Right. It was very likely that Shaul, who was very busy with the Philistines at this time, would not take note of this, but still, what right does David feel that he has to do what he's about to do to this man? So he says, "Ko yaseh Elokim la'oyvei David v'cho Yosef imashir mikol asher lo ad ora boker mashtin bekir." Remember, he's talking to a woman now. This is a little vulgar, right? You know, there's ladies here, Right? So he says, by the way, this thing, Ko Ya'aseh Elokim Liv, is a terminology that is reminiscent, as Mrs. Perlman accurately points out, of a Shvuah, but that only appears in Sefer Shmuel, in Sefer Melachim, and Sefer Megillat Rut. Somehow, I don't know, only in Shmuel, Melachim, and Rut. Doesn't appear in any other books of Tanakh, but it's certainly...
What does?
Shmuel, this terminology. Ko Yosef, Ko Ya'aseh Li. Naomi, Ruth tells us that Naomi. Ko Ya'aseh Hashem Li v'Ko Yosef, ki Amavis Yafrid Ben Yivanech. Alright, anyway. So it's a Lashon of Shvuah, and he says, if I... And notice the Oyvei David. What kind of Lashon is that known as in Hebrew? Lashon Saginahor. It's... Saginahor is an idiom. It means that you're calling a blind man one who sees a lot. In other words, you say, may all my enemies perish if I don't do such a thing. What he really means to say is, may all my family members, or my mother, or Chas V'Shalom, or my friends. Or, instead he says, my enemies. Like you see in the Talmud all the time. If this had happened, lo nishar me sone Yisrael saridu palit. Right, you hear what I just said? If this had happened, there wouldn't have been a single enemy of the Jews that would have remained. And it really, Gemara really means to say, a single Jew. But they don't want to actually have those words come off the pen. So this happens, the most common example of this in the Bible, that does appear, it appears very often in the Talmud, in the Bible, in Eov, where it says, maybe they...
Oh, you said curse God.
Right. Well, you don't want to say those words. So they say, maybe my children sinned by blessing God, and I need to bring an offering for them. Now, what's the sin in blessing God? No. He really means something else, but he doesn't want to say the words cursing, or I don't want to say the next word. So he says, instead of saying cursing, he says blessing God.
Don't they tell him, like, you should do it and die?
Like his wife tells him, why don't you bless your God and die already, since this is what, that's the way his wife says afterwards.
There is another thing, like a cemetery is called not Beit HaKvarot, but Beit HaChaim.
Beit HaChaim, of course. Yeah. Beit HaChaim, we refer to the cemetery as a place of life. There's also another place in the Bible, remember in Malachim Aleph, where they said, everybody, tear your clothes! Bring the stones to stone him. Navot blessed God. Hurry, rush to the streets. Berach. He blessed the king and God.
Vamelech.
So, Berach, Elokim, Vamelech. So we see here that the Bible sometimes uses this expression. I think in English you might call it a euphemism. Okay, a euphemism. Okay, so that's what's going on here when he says, Ko Ya'aseh Elokim la'oyvei David. He really means, Ko Ya'aseh Elokim la'David. Right? Okay, so if I leave even one, now what's a mashtin bakir, for goodness sakes? So, do you have an English translation there? What does it say?
It says, a dog? So much as a dog.
A dog. That's what a dog does.
A dog is a caliph. What is, where is
it? Mashtin is the one that urinates against the wall.
Oh.
Mashtin is to urinate, bakir is against the wall. So that's an unusual way to refer to a dog, right? All right, so what is your, do you have just a, what does it say there, a dog?
Yeah, so much as a dog, right.
Does it have a note or something there? Or anything?
There's an asterisk, yes.
Okay, all right, fine. So, anyway, so some translations...
Yeah, that's right, this is literally
some say
one
man.
It does explain the literal.
Okay, some say it means a man. I'll not leave one man or dog.
Yeah, it refers to males and can be applied to other human beings or dogs.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. Okay, so Afilu Kelev Shedarko Lahashtin Bakir, says Rashi. All right. Okay, so, but what he means is, I'm going to wipe out this man's household. Right?
It's funny that the same passage that makes such care to make a euphemism does kind of the opposite of blatantism.
That's very interesting, the euphemism when it comes to himself, and he uses a crude vulgarity when it talks about what he's going to do to the other side. Yes. It's interesting. This is not the only place in the Bible this word appears. Eliyahu predicts that every member of the household of Ahav, down to every last mashtin bekir, is going to be wiped out.
It's not vulgarity, Maybe it's better than saying at all.
Okay.
Is it necessarily, this is what David, is it quoting David, or is this the
could be. That I leave up to you to guess. But it might be right, is that this may be a Lashon Sagi Nahor for a dog. Okay. And the two in one pasuk. This is an unusual pasuk.
Did he regard it as a Moreg B'Malchut already? Or not yet?
So that's what these sources are for. I'm going to read, we're going to come to them soon. Okay, Vatera Abigail at David, Vatemaher Vatered Me'al HaChamor. So Abigail saw David, and she quickly descended from her donkey. Vatipol Apei David Al Paneh Vatishtachu Aretz. She fell before his feet, and Tishtachu, the different opinions to what this word means, it depends on whether the accent is on the chet or on the tuf. Okay, Tashvatishtahu, right? And then the shorish is shacha, which means to kafuf, which means to bend. If it's vatishtahu, some grammarians say that the shorish is not shin, the shin is l'tiferet halashon, like l'shachleil, l'shachnea, something like that. If it's vatishtahu, then the shin falls out and the shorish is chet vav, or yud of chet vav hey, which means to coil. It's a similar word, but the chet vav yud is from the Aramaic chivya, which means a
nachash,
good, snake, right? Huh. Means to coil like a snake. And to anyway, batishtachu is probably a more profuse prostration than batishtachu. Doesn't really don't get bent out of shape over this. Okay, so
it is usually written with a vav.
Two vavs? No, sometimes
it's
that's what I said, yeah, that would be two vavs, yeah. So yeah, nechanami, but when it's vatishtachu or vatishtachu, they both appear in the Bible. Some grammarians say there's a two different roots. Okay, vatipol al raglav, she fell up on. Now al does not necessarily mean on, right? Ba'alehem yachanu. Does that mean that this tribe camped right on top of the other tribe? What does it mean?
Next to.
Next to. Good. Okay. Sometimes al means in addition to, like al noshav lo le'isha.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay, so it doesn't mean that she fell right on his feet. It could mean, I don't know, another woman falls on someone's feet.
There is another one. When Rivka sees Yitzchak, there is Vatipol
Me'al HaGamal, but not on his feet.
Yeah.
When the woman came to Elisha about her son that had, she in her mind had died, she it says she fell on his feet.
Well,
okay.
Also Margalotav, by the talk about Ruth, his ancestor.
Okay, right. That certainly means around his feet.
I'm saying this is how she got Boaz.
Yeah, okay. But I would say that the regal there is really crucial, and she's has to do with chalitza and whatnot. So, yibum. Okay, vatome bi ani aduni he'avon. So here is an interesting. What does this bi mean here? The word appears in the Torah.
Bevakasha.
Okay, but she doesn't mean to say the sin is upon me. Mm-hmm. Let me. And avon here probably doesn't mean sin. It means like a punishment. Like a gadol avoni minso. My punishment is too great for me to bear, say Kayin to God. Not my sin is too great to bear. Ben Ezra points that out very clearly. Bi ani aduni avon. But to deber no amascha ve'oznecha. Let your, she speaks very, very carefully in third person. She knows what she needs to do. Ushma eis divrei amasecha. Hear the words of your bondmaiden.
Like Yehuda speaks to.
Oh yeah, in third person.
Yeah. Okay.
Like Esther speaks to Achashverosh.
Okay.
They knew how to butter up. What?
Everybody knew in the country that he was anointed.
I don't think so. I think that everyone, based on what we read in Shmuel Bet, that everyone knew he would one day be king. Because when they appoint him king in Shmuel Bet, Perek Hey, in the beginning of the Perek, it says that all the other tribes, besides Yehuda, This is after Ishbosheth, who ruled, Shaul's son ruled. And they all came to David and said, David, we knew even when Shaul was king that you were really the one who would rule over us. I could forgive David for telling them, really? So why didn't you ever help me all those times in Shmuel Aleph?
Yeah,
when,
in particular when you have a gang of 600 people. You see.
Okay, but Shaul made polite. Shaul had thousands.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is that you had to be a novel, Kishmo Kenhu, not to realize that how could you not want to curry favor with the next king? Right? Usually it's good to get your I mean, politics is politics, but what good would it do, novel, at this point, to get on the bad side of David? Because he's a novel. And novel, sometimes they do stupid things. Okay? Just if novel means stupid, foolish. All right? Kishmo Kenhu comes from our story.
Smart wife. There was a different word here.
Smart wife, yeah. I never understood that, because the Gemara in the beginning of Sota says, Mizdavgin lo alpimaso. No. Must have been from a different Gilgal. For instance, I got much more than I deserved. So don't be so surprised that Novel got much more than he deserved. Okay, so Vayakam, where are we? All right, yeah. So Al no yosim adoni esli boel ish habliyal hazeh. Don't put your mind to this. Now, Belial is usually reserved for really bad stuff. Belial means Belial, which fits our story. He makes no cheshbon. There's nothing on his shoulders. He just acts on impulse. He doesn't care about what the repercussions of what he does. No responsibilities, no consequences to his actions. He just wants to get drunk and move on to the next day. And he has the wherewithal to do that. So... And I was married off to him, you know, and what can I do? Now, well, I want you to, by the way, read between the lines that she is going to say things in the next few lines. She's still a married woman, you know, where she's hoping to switch husbands.
I thought the fact that she...
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. She's gonna, it gets better. Okay, so...
His name comes from the word
Nevala. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. From Nevala. Al Nevala, Kishmo Kenhu. It's a very famous line. Kishmo Kenhu. There's a Gemara at the end of Yuma, actually, that the Daf Yomi is going to get up to in the next 2 weeks. It's that Rabbi Meir and some of his friends spent a Shabbos at an inn, and they asked the innkeeper his name, and he said his name was Kidor.
The money,
yeah. And he refused to give his money, but the others, you know, freely gave over their money to watch over Shabbos. And then when the Shabbos is over, he robbed each one of them. And when he asked him, what did you do with your wallet? He said, I dug it underground on the inside of the room. So he said, how did you know to do that? He goes, because I didn't like his name.
What was his name?
Kidor.
Which means?
So he said, so they asked him, what's so bad about Kidor? So he says, because it says, Kidor tapuchos hema.
Oh, door. Generation.
Kidor.
I thought it's one word.
One word, Kidor. Kaf yud dalet vav resh, it says. But so it means, it's part of a verse of a very negative thing. It means an unruly generation.
There's apparently a couple that named... Their two children.
I have a good friend of mine that is called Loser. His name is Elozer, and they call him Loser.
Well, in Yiddish, but I know a person also.
Laser, loser.
Yeah, laser, loser. But that's Yiddish.
Right. Loser, yeah. Loser, it's like a Hasidic Eliezer is a loser. Anyway, so
that's for Eliezer.
So be careful. You know, you could. Some parents have like to have a little fun, but. Be careful. Actually, I have a friend who named his child. He was a son. His middle name is Fun. Isn't it fun? And he has another child. His middle name is Danger. So like when he does something dangerous and if he says, please don't do that. He goes, don't worry. My middle name is Danger. Danger is my middle name. All right, anyway, so
She followed David's messengers and
what?
New book by this Russian author, Gary Steingart. He's a comedian. He writes funny novels. His mother called him Little Failure. And
little
she
failure.
Also called him Little Son, you know, like the S-U-N. So it's like two kinds of...
Be careful, everybody. Okay, so who would ever name a child Novel? Who would ever name a child Machlon and Chilion? These names are often darshaned away, but here you have, she says, Kishmokenu, and she's the one who coins this terminology. It's very famous, Kishmokenu. I find myself saying it all the time with, you know, whatever kind of names. Okay. Novel Shmo Unevala Imo. His name is Novel. Foolishness is with him at all times. I know, I'm his wife. Va'ani Amoscha Lora Isias Nare Adonia Sher Shalachta. And I, his handmaiden, I can't say I'm totally in charge of the household, but, you know, you can see I know what I'm doing here. I have some free hand. And I didn't see any of this. If they had come to me, your men will all be eating now. Right?
You know, the parallels between here and Yaakov approaching Esav are just striking. Sending all the goods in first, speaking in third person, Adonai, my lord.
Okay,
they're both trying to calm him down.
They're both redheads.
But you don't have to be particularly clever in order to speak to such a man as...
She knows how to butter him up. Okay, that's
nothing special.
Doesn't hurt that she's beautiful either.
Is it at all possible that she was anticipating his arrival and that's what got Novel so upset and didn't want him so nearby?
David also married.
I can't see his
stretch.
I don't see it. No, I'm sure Novel choosing between giving up some of his property and giving up his wife will probably choose his wife, but Novel, they were talking about Novel here. I'm not talking about
how many wives
what a man ought to do.
How many wives did David have
at this time?
Not yet.
At this time David had one wife. Well, Michal.
He is already two.
He's about to marry Abigail, and as soon as he marries her, maybe Shaul heard about it. Michal is taken from David and given to another. You take another woman in addition to a king's daughter?
Yeah, but
you know, she's not your wife anymore. But then he marries even a third woman right afterwards. Okay, fighter. Okay. So Vata Aduni, Chai Hashem B'chein Avshchar. Here it is, everybody. Okay, this is it. I'm laying it all out for you right now. Vata Aduni, Chai Hashem B'chein Avshchar. I'm saying also Lashon Shvua. I have come to prevent you from doing something which would be very detrimental to you, and may whatever happens to any of your enemies be similar to what happens in this case. In other words, you're going to end up okay in this. How do I know? Because I'm giving you whatever, more than you would have asked for. More than my husband could have possibly given you that would have made you happy. Right? So, va'atah ha-bracha hazot, the bracha she's giving to him now is where you really can talk. Because what Yaakov gave to Esav was called a bracha. Very unusual terminology. Very rarely is a gift called a bracha. He calls it a mincha. But when he gives it to him, he says, "Kach no es birchosi." Take my brother. You know what he's getting at. Which is what?
What?
The bracha that he took from you.
Right.
20 years ago.
Take my bracha.
Right. Didn't do me any good.
Say that. Take my.
Finally, only once he says it. The when he talks to him, the Bible doesn't call it that. When he's preparing it, calls him a mincha. Take this mincha to my brother. Mincha hi shlucha, from your brother, to give you. But when Yaakov talks to him, he says, take this bracha. V'ata ha-bracha hazot asher hevi shivchascha l'aduni. Now, this bracha that I've brought you, v'nitzna l'ne'arim ha-mitalchim ragle aduni. Now, please, let it be given to your...
Oh, mincha ti, right, it says.
But when Yaakov's talking to him, later on, he says... Okay, so he says, take all this food, and he goes to the whole bracha. And he says, "Chof chet son no lepesha amasecha, ki so yaseh Hashem l'aduni bayis ne'eman." Now, I would beg you to lift and to bear the pesha of your. I didn't sin. I didn't know that you had asked my husband of this thing. It's not my, I don't have a dog in this race as far as until now, but I'm asking you that if you do something to my husband, that's going to adversely harm me. And now her point is going to be from here on that it will adversely harm you. And, but she has to say it in a very careful way. She is so brilliant that she is giving harsh rebuke to David without him knowing it, because she's you know, you don't always have to be sound right, as long as you get what you want in the end, right? So she calls it harpesha, because ishto kegufo, if my husband sinned to you, so I have a little bit of the sin. I know your house. She's hinting to the fact that he's going to be king here. Alright? I know you are fighting God's wars and God's battles, and no one finds anything evil in you. You are just and upright. A husband knows it, everybody knows it, and you have all the things to be king. Another terminology that's very common. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because we usually write this on a tombstone. Or for a dead person. You ever see the last line in any tombstone? Is the Rosh Hashanah of this?
Yeah.
Tov
yeah.
Nun Tzadik Bet Hey Tei Nishmato or Nishmato Tzuro Bitzror Hachayim.
Bitzror Hachayim. Right.
And we say it at the end of Akil Malarachamim. Tzuro Bitzror Hachayim is Nishmato. Okay. So he says Vaisa Nefesh Adonit Tzuro Bitzror Hachayim. She's saying a terminology that's usually reserved for kings. And Batsheva uses it in Melachim Aleph, which is live forever. That's what it means. That's what we say to a dead person. So it means, live forever means the dead person continues to exist in some form. Yeah, exactly. That's the Lashon Batsheva uses. All right, let me take it from there. Okay, so she says, And she's hinting here to what David did with Goliath. May the soul of anyone who comes against you be like a stone in a slingshot. In your slingshot. Right? Which be thrown much far away. Mm-hmm. By the way, she is manifesting something here that the Bible is allowing. We hardly have ever seen this before, and it fits a Gemara in Chazal that of 10% of conversation. What does it say about 10 units of conversation? Nine went to two women. So what am I getting at right here? Have you ever seen anybody, Moshe included, Avraham included, Shmuel included? Finish my sentence. Who gets to speak for so long?
Right.
Who gets to speak for so long in the Bible? Biblical speeches are 7 words, 12, 10 words, a pasuk, maybe 2 psukim. She is getting a long, long speech. Wow, where did she start? She started in pasuk chafei, and this is already. My goodness, she's still going on.
But it doesn't stop her.
No, he likes listening to this. By the way, if you have good bekiyas in Shmuel Aleph, where else do you see women talking for a long time in Shmuel Aleph?
She was Chana and she was Dvorah.
Okay, good. She was Chana, she was Dvorah. I'm talking about in conversation. Conversation. So in this Chazal, noticed this also. When Shaul asked where his donkeys are, the response he got from a bunch of women, says, he asked women, is a very long, long answer. Also, very long answer. And and they said the same thing 3 times about where to find Shmuel. So the Gemara says there. I should have said this, yes. So, but it's better if you say it. But when it says in the Gemara notices how long those women spoke to Shaul. Well, there they don't say because they were good conversationalists. What do they say, the Gemara? Anyone remember? They were. I'm sorry.
They were delaying the conversation.
Exactly, because they were admiring his phenomenal good looks, says the Gemara. Because Shaul was Yishichmo v'malag of Omi Kolam. He wanted very much to they were sort of acting a little girlish. Because they wanted to stick around. Okay, so here, let's go just to finish it up. Lo tiye zot l'cha l'fuka u'l'michshol leiv l'adoni u'lishpach dom chinam u'lahushi adoni lo. Let this not be a fuka to you. What's a fuka? It's a michshol. It's a synonym. L'ki shalom kimo v'yafik birkayim in Sefer Nochum. Right, buka uvuka umuvlaka. That's his lashon.
That's amazing.
Upik birkayim. It's a pasuk in Nachum. Peak birkayim means a michshol that makes your knees bend. It means you're frightened. So anyway, so the michshol leiv. This would be a great stumbling block for what? For your intentions to become king. Because as sure as I'm standing here, since I'm a prophetess, you're not becoming king if you do this. Why not? Because Sheris Yisrael lo yase avla, this nation will not have a king who commits murder like this. Sometimes after he becomes king, he does some bad things. But he does not become king with this in his past. There's a process whereby you will not become king if this is in your past. Okay? Right, and I want you to remember your bond maiden when you realize that this is true. Okay, all right. Now let's read this, please. Take out this sheet. Okay, there are a few things I want you to take note of. One is that there are four sources on this sheet. Look where it says David va'Abigail on the top. If you don't see the word David and Abigail on the top, you have to turn it over. Okay, good. So you have four sources here. One is the Gemara and Megillah Daf Yudal, which we will learn first because that's our original source.
What's on the other side? No, this is different. That's Yalkut Shimon.
Yes, that's what we're looking at.
No, we want to be looking at where it says David va'Abigail.
This one
here, Megillah. Yes. So there's one, a Gemara and Megillah, Daf Yudalet. 2 and 3, I don't have numbers here, but you see it says Mizmor Nun Gimel Yudalet. So this is two different versions of Medrash Tehillim. Medrash Tehillim, okay? And then? There's a parak in Tehillim, actually two parakim in Tehillim, but we're just going to do one of them. Amar Navol Belibo Ein Elokim. This Medrash says that this Navol, is also didn't believe in God. He did no. That's what we just said before. No cheshbon, no responsibility. No, what do we call that in Hebrew? An apikoros, because he's hefker. It could possibly be related to Epicurus. An Epicurean, so he just total hefkeres. So, our first source is going to be this Gemara and Megillah. Then these two sources, why did I bring you two different midrashim of the same book? Because they're two different volumes. The one at the bottom on the left is like a Lumdisha version. It's Medrash Tehillim with the parish of Mari Cohen. The one on the right is a more scholarly version by Shlomo Borber. Not to be confused with Martin Buber, of course. But this is Medrash, two different Mahadurot, and the reason why I gave you both is because there's a slight difference. And then the fourth, you'll see the most recent version of the Yalkut Shimoni. Yalkut Shimoni is just that. It's a Yalkut. It's a collection of Midrashim. Since most Midrashim of antiquity was on the Torah, so Yalkut Shimoni's gift to us is that it collects Midrashim on the Vayim Ksuvim in an organized fashion, and it's quite valuable. So I just wanted to show you how Yalkut Shimoni reads it. That is also the order of when these works were written. The Gemara and Megillah is the oldest, of course. That's the source of what we're looking at. Medrash Tehillim is a source that appears a few hundred years later, and Yalkut Shimoni is a collection of midrashim put together even later. So midrashim may be as old as the original. These are four of the original source. The four, you can clearly see it's the same source, and the source is as follows. It is what Avigail was really telling David when she came out to meet him. We know what it is. Don't kill my husband. If you kill him, it won't be good for you. Gemara says. Looking at the left side where it says Megillah Yudalit. David wants to kill him, and she says, why do you want to kill my husband? And this is where it kicks in. Morid b'malchus hu. V'lo tzarech l'midiyane. She says, if you think my husband deserves the death penalty, take him to court. David knows he would lose a Beis Din on that, right? He didn't give me any food when I demanded it. So what do you want to do? I want to kill him for that. Really? So I protected his sheep. Okay, so David says, so his response to her was, I don't have to take him to court. He is rebellious against the king. So she tells him, Amra lo, excuse me, Adayin Shaul Kayam. King Saul is still alive. V'lo yatsa tova'acha ba'olam. And your teva, your nature, the fact that you are king, I may know it. Why do I know it?
Because
this is Megillah Daf Yudalit that's trying to prove that she's a Neviyah, right? She says, I know your teva, but they don't. Shaul is still king. If my husband had considered you king the way I do, he would have come out to the way I'm coming out now. Now, of course, Naval, by the way he is, he's a Naval, he should have been able to, without Nevuah, determine such a thing. Right? I don't need Nevuah to know certain things.
Or to know to give somebody
to anticipate certain things.
It's problematic, though, because David is so incredibly respectful of Shaul to the point where he puts his life at risk, where he refuses to harm him. So to say that he's king at this point is a little bit problematic for him.
I hear you, but this is now getting towards the end of that whole line. You know, he may have been fed up already. Enough of this. Right. So the Gemara, although of course in our narrative, David never tells her, I'm king, so why he acted insolently against me. But the Gemara puts that into his words, because how else, why else would he ever have the inkling of taking this man's life because he didn't give me food?
Right.
So take a look. Amalah. So David responded to her, Baruch tamacha ubrucha. Right? Alright, the Gemara actually says that she's hinting at Velotia Zos Lefuka. This is the just typical Talmudic exegesis. Let this not be a stumbling block for you. Implies that there will be another stumbling block for you, and that's going to be Bathsheba. So, all right, but it's okay. All right, but let's now. So, but I just want to contrast what we just read to the two sources that we have before us. So, let's start with.
Here he was generous to Uzir Tzav by Barak with Ratzach to Megam Yerusha.
Where did you see Rish Yerusha?
No, I'm saying he got the wife. He didn't have to send out the husband.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Hashem did that for him here. All right. Look at this. It says Mizmor Nun Gimel. Mean go to the right of the source we just did. Look where I underlined. Now notice how this source is called Medrash Tehillim. It's clearly a remake of the original source of the Gemara. Amro lo Avigail le David, Adoni Hamelech, im bo hadin hazeh elecha ma'ata oseh. My master the king. So already you see it's a very different Indian about how she's coming to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
She acknowledges, you're the king. But what would be the case if this case came to you in court? Poor person comes to a rich man and says, give me tzedakah. Tenli pasecha, give me some bread. Ve'enon is kaklo, but he doesn't help him. Ve'anino fel alav ahorgo, and therefore the poor man falls upon the rich man and kills him. If this court case came to you, the Medrash is using mefakfek as a play on words to lufuka, and you start to mumble and jumble and wonder what you should do, and you know that you wanted to kill someone for not doing tzedakah for you. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they would say, didn't he do that to Naval? If this is what you're going to do to my husband, Shekeinu omer v'lo tia zos lefuka. That's why she told him, don't let this be a stumbling block. Al tefak feik b'picha. V'al tomar b'shvil sha'atam melech. And don't say that because I'm king, who can rebuke me? You do it to yourself. Rebuke yourself. I can't make you stop doing this. You have to make yourself not do this. I can't stop you. I don't have the men to stop you. You can overrun me and my husband and every mashtin bakir in my family. But you have to convince yourself that that's not a wise thing for your plans. So what happened with this source? Notice twice in this source she refers to him as king. What is this source saying?
That she had Nivua.
You're king now. She's speaking to him as if though he's king now, even with a living shoal. What is she telling him?
He's going to be king.
Even if you are king, you don't have the right to do this to my husband.
Right.
Take a look at how the Medrash Tehillim at the bottom reads this. Two lines from the top. You see where it says, look at the 98th, go to the other side of this Medrash. It says, at the end, it says, Amalei Avigayel David, Adoni David, Im Yavo Hadin Hazel Afanecha Ma'ata Oseh. What did this version of Medrash Tehillim do?
He's putting him in.
Where are you looking now?
Same page.
Here?
Left side, down there.
Down there.
Amalei Avigayel David, Adoni David, Im Yavo Hadin Hazel Afanecha Ma'ata Oseh. She leaves out the word
Melech. Right.
Now it's true that later on it says, don't say that Bishvil Shani Melech. You might think you're a Melech, but you're not. I have three different sources here. One, the Gemara that doesn't mention Melech at all. Two, this top source that mentions Melech a few times. It means it's more enlightened to keep mentioning Melech. In other words, David, even if you are Melech, you are. In other words, according to the Gemara, she admits to him that if you were Melech, you're right. My husband is misbehaving with you and you should kill him. But you're not Melech. Shaul is Melech. But here in this source, she runs out to him and acknowledges in her full knowledge as prophetess. David, I'm a prophetess. I know someone already anointed you king. You have a din of Melech, and I'm willing to admit everything you want to say about what you are. And still you don't have the right to kill my husband because you were not ruling over all of Israel. Now this is an interesting thing. Tosfos in the second perek in Masechta Sanhedrin. Let's learn a little bit, a little pilpul. Tosfos says the following. That there is a dispute in the second perek in Masechta Sanhedrin, whether, listen to this klal, kol ha'omor b'parshas melech, melech butar bo. In chapter 9 of Shmuel Aleph, when Bnei Yisrael asked for a king, chapter 8 I should say, Shmuel Hanavi said, Zeyiye mishpat ha'melech, you want a king? Let me tell you what this king will do. And he goes on to list a whole nice paragraph that, not found in the Torah, because the Torah's picture of a king just lists all the things he shouldn't do. Right? Not too many wives, not too much money, not too big army, not all the things he shouldn't do. The one thing he does is he writes a Sefer Torah and he sits and learns. He's a philosopher king. He's like Plato's a philosopher king in the Republic. And in Sefer Shmuel, he says, wait till you see what this king will do. This king will build cities and he'll take your men and he'll make them work for him. He'll take your sons and he'll make them serve in his army. He'll take your daughters and he'll bring them into his court and he'll make them to this and to that. And he'll take your fields and he'll take your vineyards and he'll take your taxes. He'll take your houses. He'll take everything from you. You still want a king? So there's a machlokis in the Gemara called Ha'amur B'Parshas Melech, whether Melech Mutarbo or he was just trying to scare them. In other words, does it mean that he was telling them the real law of Israel is to allow all these things? Or not? Now, how we paskin, you know, it's a dispute in the Talmud. Where do we look? The Rambam happens to paskin like the one who says, Melech Mutarbo. Not Melech Asurbo, Melech Mutarbo. So he asks Tosfos, if Melech Mutarbo, I refer
you mean
to this.
He's permitted to do.
Someone referred to this guy just before, and so did I when we talked about blessing the king and God. What was Achav sin? Achav asked one of his subjects for a vineyard. Remember the guy's name? Navot, right? And he refused. All right? And his wife had him killed. Right? So Tosfos first asked, what was wrong? He shouldn't have even asked. Just take the vineyard, like Shmuel said you can. You know the story I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay? So Tosfos gives six answers to this question. One of the answers is that the rules of kingship in Israel do not apply unless you're the only king in Israel. When there's another king in Israel, and all through most of our history there were two kings, what right do you? You don't have the right. There's another king ruling in town. You know what I'm saying? You don't have absolute right over this nation, not even the ones you're ruling over. There's another king in Israel. Right? So I apply that reason here. David, even if you are king, you think you're king. Right? This is how Mendrash Tehillim says, you don't have the right to do this. There's another king. And I'm speaking that way because I'm a prophetess. And I can tell you things that you may want to know about what's going to happen.
Does this sin of Mori B'malchus, can that be done without any kind of knowledge or intent? Because if David knew, and if she knew, but if he had no idea that David was king, how could he be Mori B'malchus?
Of course. David is acting on impulse here too. Of course. That's why she's right in saying, if you do this, you're so wrong that you'll never become king. Right? So now let's take a look at the Yalkut Shimoni. And basically, the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a very late source. So this collection of Midrashim has before it at least what we have before us. Some versions of Medrash Tehillim, Megillah Daf Yudalid. How is he going to cite it? Yalkut Shimoni is this great collection of Midrashim that were just recorded pasuk by pasuk in Nevi'im. So you can just take a look and which one the Yalkut Shimoni chose. Mm-hmm. Look at line 67. It says, Amalei Morid B'malchus Hu V'lo Tzarech L'Medayne. That's where the Gemara started off. He's rebelling against the king. I don't even have to judge him. Amalei Adayin Sha'ul Kayam V'lo Yatzar Tzavacha Ba'olam. There you go. The Yalkut Shimoni, the latest of the sources, thinks that the Gemara was correct in its assessment. But that's a little less enlightened, because the assumption is that you don't have the right to do this because you're not king. Is
that when you are king?
If you were king, you would have had the right to do this to my husband. Mm-hmm. So, or I would just say that my husband never would have behaved this way if he knew you were king. So all right, we have these two different sources, but I see where the Medrash Tehillim is coming from. In other words, that and I apply that answer that Tosfos gave. David, no matter how much you think you're king, there's another king. The rule that you think you have, that Tosfos asked about Achav in the second paragraph, doesn't apply. It's really, she's being very, very alumnish. There's another king in town, no matter what you think you are. You know, how do you expect my husband to share that position with you when there's another king?
Maybe also, like, I'm trying to think of his psychology, because after all, he's a crook, he's a lowlife. I mean, like, so why doesn't he understand that it's his benefit to give David? Maybe, what does it mean that he's a novel? The fact that David doesn't come and say, I'm the king, I demand, or you owe me, you must give me. He's asking, please, you know, this and that. He's asking as like a weakling, and that's a novel's response. He says, oh, you're coming from a position of non-strength.
Fair enough. Remember, novel, the way novel spoke to David in the beginning of the story, I can put these words in novel's life. David, you're a Morid B'Malchus. I'm not helping someone like you. David is a Morid B'Malchus in the eyes of many people.
I think it's the same thing like Tara in Moshe Rabbeinu. It says God hardened his heart. How he hardened his heart? The interpretation I think of is that when Tara sees Moshe Rabbeinu come and say, the Lord, the creator of all the universe, sent me here to ask you, please, can you send my people? It's like a wimp. Goes out with him, like that. The Lord, King of the Universe, who's in charge of everything, like he asked me to ask you a favor. Let
okay,
me
so
go.
So
it's setting it up.
The Sforno says something like this. The Sforno says that Paro Paro would have been more impressed if Moshe had come done something that was, you know, mind-boggling from the outset. But that's not how God works. God wants his word to be heard slowly. Let him think that the blood killed the fish and the frogs left and brought the lice, and the lice brought the devil, and the devil brought the devil, and the devil brought the shit. You know, so let him think that way. I'm going to tell, you know, bring him along.
But that's the way. That's why Naval thought that David is admitting that he's not king.
So let's conclude by saying, at this point, we still have to finish the parak next time, is that Naval's foolishness is that you can't predict. His behavior is so unpredictable. Usually, people can be predicted that they will act in their own self interests. But he has his own idea of what his self-interests are, right? So why do you keep doing things that get you so fired, get people to break up with you? Because you're a fool, right? In other words, we hope that people can start to learn life experience. Some of these smarts are not something you learn in a textbook. Okay, we'll close with this. We're going to start in Mitzvah Hashem with David's response to Har. Vayomer David la Abigail with Pasuk Lamed Bet. And we see two against two. The Alka Shimoni sides with the Gemara, and we have two different versions of.
Okay. Shemuel.
Okay, we have Marv next door. Please pass these up.